This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
Hey team, it's Buck. Have you tried a Casper mattress yet? They are incredible. They're obsessively engineered and they come at a shockingly fair price for a mattress that brings together technology and comfort to also be a great value is just too much for any of you to pass up. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and the perfect bounce. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. It is an award-winning mattress that absolutely will not disappoint. Try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. And for listeners of this show, you can get a special $50 toward any mattress by going to casper.com/buck. Casper.com/buck and using Buck as the code. Terms and conditions apply.
The Buck Sexton Show.
Team, we're joined now by Staff Sergeant Michael Golombeski. He served 8 years with the United States Marine Corps and is a combat veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Golombeski served as a joint terminal attack controller with Marine Special Operations Team 8222. Part of MARSOC, and he's the author of a new book out now on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon.com. Dagger 22, U.S. Marine Corps Special Operations in the Bala Murghab, Afghanistan. Staff Sergeant Golombeski, great to have you. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon to you.
So please, may I call you Mike?
Oh, absolutely.
Mike, tell us a bit about Dagger 22, your new book that's out.
Okay, so a lot of people may have already read the first book about the team that I served with in Afghanistan. It was called Level Zero Heroes. Dagger 22 is the continuation of that story, because what we found when we started writing the first book, that the whole story of the deployment and the team and the events that happened in the river valley there in northwest Afghanistan just wouldn't fit in one book.
All right, well, Mike, hold on a second, because a lot of people, I'm sure they want to hear a bit, and we got plenty of time for you. So tell us a bit about what you talked about in the first book, and then we'll move on to Dagger 22.
So the first book, Level Zero Heroes, basically just tells the story of myself being assigned to, at the time, this new thing, which was Marine Corps Special Operations. They were seeking staff sergeants to be able to come over and become JTAC, so a joint terminal attack controller, which is somebody who's in charge of airstrikes, basically acting as the liaison between the guys on the ground and any air assets available. So the story basically goes into me joining MARSOC and then basically finding my way down to the teams and then getting deployed to this remote area of Afghanistan with a bunch of guys that I had just met and really had no idea what my place was amongst them. And the story is extremely dynamic, not so much a story about me, but it's a story about the guys on the team and also some of the other guys that were in the River Valley with the U.S. Army and Italian soldiers.
So Bala Murghab, by the way, not one you often hear about. You know, it's not a name that you don't that sort of rings as many bells for people as, say, Kandahar, Helmand, those provinces, or, you know, some of the cities they're in, some of the areas they're in. Bala Murghab is what? It's up along the border, kind of in the northwest, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the only people that actually know of the Bala Murghab River Valley are probably the ones that serve there, with main focus being on the major cities, so Kabul, Kandahar, and also that tension area right there on the Pakistani border is kind of where everybody thinks when they think of Afghanistan. Well, this river valley was northwest Afghanistan, so kind of near the Iranian border, but we were just south of the Turkmenistan border, probably about five clicks. And this was an untouched region of Afghanistan for, let's see, we got there in 2009, and the first forward operating base was set up in 2008, so the war had been going on for, you know, 6-7 years already before we even got there.
And what were some of the challenges you faced? I mean, was this heavy Taliban territory? What were some of the issues that you and your MARSOC team had to deal with?
Oh, yeah. So when the first forward operating base that was established there was established by the Spanish, It was called FOB Columbus. This area had become kind of a safe haven for Taliban fighters, because normally the fighting season or the cycle goes with a lot of fighting during the spring and summertime. And then once the weather starts to get bitter cold, they'd like to kind of just settle down and go dormant for the winter. Well, this is an ideal place for them because there were no U.S. or NATO forces up there, so they could retreat to these areas and just, you know, hang out for the winter, relax, regroup, replan their spring offensive, and then, you know, stage and start the next fighting season. Our biggest issue with being there was just the remoteness of this, of the location. There was only one road in, one road out, if you even want to call it a road. It was more like a goat trail. Everything that came to us had to come to us either, it all had to come by airdrops. And a lot of the time the weather was just not cooperative whatsoever, because it was a river valley, so it'd get socked in with weather a lot. So we couldn't get aircraft. Everything had to be dropped to us or possibly brought in on a helicopter. But once winter hit, there were no more ground transports.
And you were doing what kind of operations mostly? I mean, were you going into villages, trying to establish contact? Were you just hunting down HVTs? Well, and what was sort of the mission set?
The original mission was to go up there and conduct FIT, so foreign internal defense. We were supposed to partner up with our Afghan army counterparts and basically help them along, help them go out on patrol, show them how to, you know, operate in an actual combat environment, because it's one thing that they go through the training in some of the bigger cities to actually come into the Army, but once they had to go out and go to these different areas around the country, they still need assistance on how to operate and do things. So that was our primary focus when we first got there. But as you read in the first book, everything kind of goes south within the first 24 hours of us being there, with an incident that ended up taking the lives of 282nd Airborne Troopers. And that event basically started a tumbling and snowballing effect of events that leads and carries the readers through both of the books.
Now, the second book is, so the first book is sort of the warmer season, brings us into the Balamorgab Valley. And then you said the second book is when it's winter time. I mean, how did that change the AO for you guys? And what are some of the things you touch upon in Dagger 22?
The weather there in the wintertime, anyone who's ever been to Afghanistan in the wintertime knows it's absolutely brutal. Especially if you're not at a big operating base, guys that are out at these small combat outposts, they just suffer through the winter. What we found was when we decided to write two books, we found a natural pause in the story, and that's kind of where we broke it. So Level Zero Heroes ends on New Year's Eve 2009. Dagger 22 literally picks up the next day. And the reason we broke it there is because the first book has a very the Taliban was very dictating of when and where the fights would happen. So a lot of what we were doing with our partner forces, also with the 82nd Airborne, is we were doing a lot of reactive things to what the Taliban was doing. We were spending a lot of time just kind of shaping the battlefield and trying to expand the security bubble around the forward operating base to give us a little bit of breathing room. Come to Dagger 22, now we have that safety or security bubble established. We've got all these small combat outposts holding the perimeter. Now it's time to start going on the offensive, because, you know, wintertime in Afghanistan is brutal. We can still operate in it. It's extremely hard for the Taliban to do it, so that's the time to get in there and figure out where they're at and go take care of business before the spring comes.
Did you have some high-level takedowns, or were you able to break up some IED networks, or what were sort of some of the highlights of the winter, you know, operational highlights of that winter period?
During the winter, we were able to, through a series of different operations, we slowly started chipping away at the different cells. So if you have one river valley, you normally have one person or one cell that's kind of like the lead one, and then every other village will kind of put together their own little cell. So we started chipping away at the small ones, doing night raids, sniper OPs, basic presence patrols to try to stir up the enemy to get into a fight. It ends up coming that we isolate, identify the command cell, which was directly south of our forward operating base, and we do a series of night missions to kind of soften the target area, get them on their heels, and then we our team teams up with an ODA, which is a Army Special Forces team, along with over 100 Afghan commandos, which is the Afghan version of a special ops, and we end up conducting a large village clearing operation to just completely uproot or kill the command cell in the valley.
I remember being in Iraq and Afghanistan with CIA, Mike, and talking to different military personnel and hearing dramatically disparate accounts of the effectiveness of the local partners, right? Depending on who we're talking about and where it is in the country, right? You know, some Afghan units, some Iraqi units were actually pretty solid door kickers after a while, after guys had trained them, and some others, they said they were still, you know, if they could just get them to stop having, you know, accidental discharges, they would have felt like it was a big, you know, a big victory. How were the commandos that you worked with in Afghanistan? How were they?
The commandos were top notch. It was a privilege to work with those guys. Very different than your straight leg Afghan army, where your main concern is just keeping accountability and make sure they're not selling their spare socks for something in the bazaar. It's all about numbers to them. They have to fill the ranks. So the regular army, I mean, you'll get ones or two guys that are pretty locked on. Those individuals usually go on to become commandos. Commandos actually have night vision goggles. They've got decent weapons, things like that. They have more extensive training, and they're also paid more. But it's a huge difference from operating with the regular Afghan army as compared to the Afghan commandos. Now, that's not to say that when you read in Dagger 22, you'll see they are getting worn out very quickly because they're in such high demand. They're normally reserved for big operations like this one that we had done with a clearing operation for a high-level command cell. Normally, they're reserved for capturing high-value targets. So they're used to just flying in on a objective or a compound or building, you know, set up security, get in there, do what they have to do. They're usually off target within 4 or 5 hours. Well, the operation that we had, we were basically knuckle fighting for over 12 hours. And at some point you start to see in your partners, so your local forces, you start to see them wearing down and really not being involved, especially when they start losing guys and people are getting injured, things like that. So it's a balancing act. You got to know when to pull them out. You got to know when to really take them in and push them.
Talking to Staff Sergeant Mike Golombeski. He was with Marine Special Warfare for 8 years. He has written a book. It's his second book, Dagger 22, U.S. Marine Corps Special Operations in the Balamur Gob in Afghanistan. Staff Sergeant, it is an honor and a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Thank you for your service, and thanks for giving us some time today. And I will check out your book, and I hope the audience will too.
Oh, absolutely. The pleasure was all mine.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-490-1099 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-490-1099.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.